honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with Dr. Gilbert Stocks of Clovis, California. I know he doesn't sound 100 years old, or look it for that matter, but as of this week, he does indeed have an entire century in his rearview mirror. This retired optometrist has described the twists and turns he experienced as a Navy bomber pilot in World War II. He even snuck in a reference a few of you may have caught, referring to the Combat Air Patrols, or CAPs, he flew around Hawaii and Okinawa as white cap flights, downplaying the danger a bit. We still haven't heard about his closest call, and I have a few other questions for him, too.
One, I mean, we kind of skipped over a pretty important detail, because you told me some of the places you went and some of the planes you flew, but Jacksonville and your detour there was a pretty important step in your life, I think.
Yes, it was, because that's where eventually I met my wife. That was eventually my wife. The gal that was link trainer. And that was another thing. I hated those things because they worked on the vacuum. And you get in there and you in the dark, you can't see anything but the instruments. Okay, you want to make a standard two needle turn to the left. Okay, you turn a little to the left, nothing happens. Now, you turn a little more, nothing happens. Well, pretty soon that vacuum kicks in and boom, you've got a four-needle turn instead of a two. And I used to hate that thing for that reason. And it is just...
And a lot of people listening don't even know what a link trainer is. This is, you know, long before we had these computerized flight simulators like they train on today.
Yeah, they've got them now. They're better than the airplane themselves. Yeah.
But not back then. So tell me the story. And you're not the first pilot, by the way, who I've met who married his link trainer instructor. It's interesting how these parallels form. But tell me about that. How did you meet her? What was your first impression? And what gave you the chutzpah to think you might be able to marry this link trainer instructor?
Well, then back there at my age, women was my second thing that I did in the Navy besides flying. It was flying and then women. So I can't tell you. It's just one of those things. I just don't know.
It just seemed like a potentially life-changing moment or a twist of fate that you ended up there while she was there.
Yeah.
Because you could have been sent overseas earlier?
Well, or? You know, it's kind of like people say it was preordained. Mm-hmm. Well, you can argue that everything is preordained because you can't prove it. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to say, yeah, preordained.
And the other thing, you'd gone in pretty early, 1942, right? The war is still pretty young. And a lot of guys I've talked to, we're kind of itching to get overseas and fly some combat missions. How did you feel about that? Was that something that motivated you? Were you comfortable staying stateside? Or do you remember having any kind of preference or emotion about that?
I was hoping that, when I got my orders, I wonder where I'm going now. You know, I was looking, hoping that I was going someplace. And then when I saw a report back to Pensacola, well, that was one turning point in my life, because I could have gone on, if I'd have gone on in, I had a better chance of getting killed over there than I did at Pensacola, because one chance that I remember that I never told anybody about it, because I knew if I had told somebody, there would have been a definite change in things. because I was following back there. We had instruction, you know, to go out with an instructor. And then when they were soloing, we would put them in flying in formation, three planes and with a chase plane. And I was flying a chase plane, and the flight was over. So we was going back to the base, observe what they did right and what they did wrong. And all of a sudden, I found that my right rudder was all the way in, but I was still flying straight. Now, if the rudder was working right, that should have given a skew to it, see, but, you know, straight as it could be. So I would wander off a little, but I had the tab wheel over here that I could bring it back. And I'd hit this one, it wouldn't go. I'd kick that one, it'd go. And I was going down with my rudders like this. That's not right. I said, well, what in the world am I going to do? Because just a mile down the road, I'm going to circle and I've got to land. I got to do something. So I knew that if I went up and told the tower that I was having this problem, somebody would come up in a plane and look at it and said, but I could control it with my stick and my, over here, my wheel. I could fly it okay. So I said, well, if I tell it, they're going to look up it. Then they're going to call the tower. The tower's going to call the commander. And the commander's going to call the main station. And the main station is going to tell, well, ditch it in the bay. Well, I did not want to go into the bay because with those extended wheels, there's a good chance to fly it upside down. And if I don't say anything, I can control it with my tab wheels and the stick okay. And if I wreck it, well, I'm in trouble. I knew I was going to be in trouble either way. One way or the other, I had, you know, I was already just making it worse. Well, I'm going to stick my neck out. I'm going to fly it in. So I come on around, I lined it up, you know, and come on down, right in, and just as it hit the ground, boom, back to normal. And I come on in, nothing had happened. Now, had I told them and they made me ditch that in the bay, why, that would have been too, and they always try to find out what's wrong. And nothing's wrong. So, yeah, you just did it for fun. Well, no, I never do anything fun if I'm going to do that. And I think what it was that somewhere the cable had slipped off of the wheel, and the jar made it pop back on. And this is you the first one I've ever told this to. So I dodged a bullet that day.
And this was in the SNV, is that what you're flying?
I was flying the intermediate. It was an SNV, but I don't know who made it, and I don't know what it's the name I was using.
But it had fixed landing gear.
Yeah, it had fixed landing gear.
And that was part of your concern about having to ditch in the water, was that would leave you upside down, and that could that have cost you your life?
Well, it could have. I mean, you know, life is a mystery.
But you've never told anybody this all these years.
You're the first one I ever told it to.
Well, thank you for sharing, and I want to make sure I understand it. So as you're calculating this all in your mind, you really don't have any good options, and you don't know if that rudder's ever going to work right again, but you figure between the throttle control and the trim tab, you can bring it in?
That's right, yeah. But I know, even though I could control it, if I told them there was no way they was going to let me try that.
They would have said, out of precaution, go ahead and ditch it.
Yeah, go ahead and put it in the water.
And that I'm glad you brought that up, because I've heard a lot of stories about training flights that did end up in the water. So, and a lot of people don't think about that. We think about the casualties overseas. We don't hear a lot about the casualties stateside. Were there guys that you knew or things that you witnessed or heard about where people lost their lives or were injured in some of those training flights at the places you were?
I know that on the same station there at Ellison Field, the moving airplane has the right-of-way. And everything is all painted out, crosswalks and so forth. Okay, if airplane is coming and you're going to the crosswalk, you're going to wait until the airplane passes. Well, this day, this cadet I don't know what he was thinking about. He had his parachute and everything, and there's a plane coming, and he just walked right in front of it. Cost him his arm. He was just lucky it didn't kill him.
And you said something a minute ago, too. You know, had you gone overseas instead of going back to Pensacola, that you might have been in more dangerous duty, more in harm's way. Who knows what might have happened to you? Out of all the aircraft that you got to fly, was there one that you appreciated the most, that you enjoyed flying the most?
The one for actual joy was the Stearman. It's a little bitty biplane, you know, for training and everything. Yeah, you can have more fun with that than you can flying the four engine. You can't do much barrel rolls on that.
There's a group called Dream Flights. They go around taking guys like you up in a Stearman again if you want to go. They even let you have the controls. They've got a two-seat Stearman. The privateer, we didn't touch on it too much, what it was like to fly. And you talked about those white cap missions.
It was just like flying a B-24, because all it was, they just took the B-24 and made those adjustments. They took their double tail off and put that monstrosity on back there.
You weren't a fan of the single tail?
Well, all I did was fly them. I didn't have anything to do about designing them, so I don't know. But I had crew of 12. Oh, there's another one that I must tell you. This happened out of Jacksonville, Florida. The Navy said the crews could not have mascots. No way, no mascots. Well, at that time, we were flying B-24s. When you're landed, the belly of the B-24 is only about a foot and a half above the ground. So to enter it, you have to open the bomb bay doors, step on the little track they have between the two bomb bays, and then up into the cockpit. That's the only way you can get other than crawl out the window. So this one crew, there's always one that's going to bust their ass. They had a small goat, a little bitty goat, Johnny, you know. And he's got where he knew him, see? So when they landed, every time they opened the bomb bay, it made a noise. And the goat learned that noise, so he was always the first one off. So they would, you're laughing, you know what's happened. So when they went on a trial run out to drop depth charges, but while they were out there, when they got ready to make their run, they opened the bomb bay door. The little goat heard the noise. Hey, we are home. Dived right in the ocean.
I guess that's why you don't have mascots. Well, I just had, you know, one of those goofy ideas. If you ever go to Colorado Springs, they've got the National Museum of World War II Aviation, and all their planes fly, so they have a PBY that still flies. So if they put you in the cockpit of that Catalina, you think you could take it off?
Sure. No, I can fly that sucker.
I thought you might say that. And, you know, you mentioned optometry school, and you practiced as an eye doctor till 1995, well into your 70s. Am I connecting the dots that you were able to do that because of the GI Bill?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've come to the conclusion we had it good, but everybody after us, they're just getting kicked and screwed and everything else.
When you think back on what you did in the war, your contributions, your service to our country, is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
Yeah, that I didn't kill myself. That... No, I can't think of anything that's going to affect the price of eggs in China. No, I really don't know.
I think just about everything's affecting the price of eggs in China right now, the way this inflation's going. Most of the people listening to this weren't alive for World War II, and it's hard for them to wrap their brain around what it was like. Is there something you think we need to understand about you and all the other Americans alive then and what they did and why it still matters now?
Yeah, well, it'll have to get political. If we will just use the brains the good Lord gave us and quit messing around and saying that I am better than you are and work together, that's what the country needs, because we're coming into another situation just like the Great Depression, and I'm afraid it's going to be a lot worse.
And is that what you saw the country do in the 1940s, come together?
A lot more so than they are now. And right now, I feel that nobody is moving in the same direction with anybody else. You know, it's ridiculous.
You're 100 years old, and people can hear how sharp you are. Your faculties are strong. You're in good shape. You stand straighter than I do. What's your secret? How have you maintained such good health for 100 years?
I don't know how many people have asked me that question. And about the only thing I got left is just, you know, good, clean living. Oh, God, that's funny. If you told me that I was going to hit 100, you're nuts.
I am, you know, curious, because 100 years is a long time. And that's a lot of life that you've lived and a lot of lives that you've touched. I'm sure there are a lot of people thankful for the way you helped them with their eyesight over all these years. Is there something when you kind of look back over 100 years that you have the most gratitude for, that you're the most thankful for, the most satisfied with?
Well, I would have to say that the thing that I'm the most proud of is my family. I have five wonderful kids, and they're all grown. And they've got kids of their own who've got kids of their own. But they'll always be my kids. I'm thankful for that.
Have you ever wondered how different your life would have been if you didn't join the Navy?
I do it all the time. I wonder, well, now, I'm kind of like Yogi Berra. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. I don't know how it worked out, but I think it worked out the way that it was supposed to have worked out.
And anything else about your wife? I mean, what are the odds you're going to meet your wife as your link trainer instructor?
You know, to tell her the truth, I don't know what she saw in me enough to marry me in the first place. She saw something. I don't know. If she'd had her eyes checked before, I might have not got her. I don't know.
She must not have had a very good optometrist.
No, she didn't.
But no, she married one.
Yeah, she is. I can't say enough about her because just like a team of horses, you know, work together. Well, that's the way we were.
Well, I know there's one thing I forgot to say. I forgot to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and for telling us your story.
I'm glad to do it. Yeah.
Dr. Gilbert Stocks, 100 years young. Don't forget to check out that video from the surprise 100th birthday parade for him in Clovis, California. You'll find it on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or on hometownheroesradio.com. His children told me this week that he's been talking about reaching the century mark since he was 50. Mission accomplished, and he's not done yet, as I'm sure you could hear today. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.